Parsha Bahar has one of the most famous Rashis, I think, in the Torah, and it's his question has been paraphrased in many, many other settings. Bahar begins by discussing the mitzvah of Shemitah and Yovel. And the mitzvah of Shemitah is introduced with the words Perek Kaf Hei Pasuk Aleph. Almost all of this week's parsha is Perek Kaf Hei. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor. Hashem said to Moshe Bahar Sinai, and of course Rashi voices the question, actually quotes the Toras Kohanim that asks and answers the question. Ma inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai? What's the special connection between Shemitah and Sinai? As if to say, of all of the mitzvahs were given at Sinai, why does the Torah make special mention of Har Sinai within the context of Shemitah? Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe, Behar Sinai lemor, and then moves into Shemitah. Ma inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai? Valo kol mitzvahs nehmu b'Sinai. All mitzvahs were said at Sinai. Ella, this is still the Toras Kohanim's answer now, to teach you. Ma Shemitah, just like Shemitah, Ne'emru Kloloseha, Uprotoseha, Vidiktu Keha Misinai, just as Shemitah was given from Sinai in its entirety, Kloloseha, its general principles, Protoseha Vidiktu Keha, its specific details, Afkulon, so to all mitzvahs, Ne'emru Klolosehen, Vidiktu Kehen, Misinai. So to all mitzvahs were given in both the general ideas of the mitzvah and the specific details. This actually is famous as the first Rashi in Bahar, but as we just mentioned, Rashi actually hasn't said anything yet. This is all the Toras Kohanim. What Rashi will do is then explain the Toras Kohanim as he proceeds to say, Kach shone b'Toras Kohanim, v'nirali shekach perusha. Rashi's perush in the Toras Kohanim is less quoted. Everyone stops at the opening quotation, calling it Rashi, is actually the Toras Kohanim. And indeed, so will we this evening. But we should know, just Leman Haseda Hanachon, that it's actually the Toras Kohanim quoted by Rashi. And the reason why we will stop here is because, in a sense, the Toras Kohanim has asked a question, given an answer, but there is a post-Toras Kohanim question to be asked. Namely, if the Toras Kohanim's question was, why was the specific mention of Har Sinai with reference to Shemitah, and the answer is to teach you that all mitzvahs were given in their entirety like Shemitah, and the moral of the story therefore is everything is given Kloloseihen and Protoseihen b'Sinai, we may still persist and ask, why of all the mitzvahs was Shemitah chosen to be the one to demonstrate that, like it, all other mitzvahs were given at Sinai? Why was Shemitah the one chosen to fly the flag for Kloloseihen v'Diktu Kehem? One could have imagined any other of the 613 mitzvahs could have been exactly the same. At the end of the day, it's from the redundant, seemingly repetitious reference of Har Sinai with regards to a mitzvah, just like that mitzvah completely, so to all mitzvahs. And therefore, interestingly, the question of the Toras Kohanim is still remain. It's just asked in a kind of a, perhaps, sotto voce, a milder tone, but yet, ma inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai, still, why is Shemitah mentioned specifically at Har Sinai, for the reason that the Toras Kohanim gives. And that, of course, opens a whole new literature amongst the Mefarshim as to what's the special yichus of Shemitah to Sinai. And I saw a very beautiful explanation of this matter in the Sefer La Torah Vela Moadim, which is a volume on the Torah and Moadim by Rav Zevin. Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, who's famous as the first editor of the Encyclopedia Talmudit, and of course his classic work HaMoadim B'Halacha, also authored a number of other volumes, and he has thoughts on the parsha La Torah Vela Moadim. And he explains as follows. Mitzvahs can be divided into numerous categories. We're famous with the distinction of into the divisions of Ben Adam LaMakom, between man and God, Ben Adam LaChaveira, between man and man, and in a sense the Torah thus is divided into two. However, there are those who actually see a third division It's slightly more enigmatic, and it's called Bein Adam LaAtzmo, between man and himself. Mitzvahs that we could call are self-development. They're not overtly relating to Hashem, and they're not overtly relating to people, but they're developing the person to become a more of a Torah person. And in fact, the classic example of such a mitzvah, forgiven within this category, is Talmud Torah, learning Torah. When a person learns, he becomes the process of learning itself. It enables him to perform other mitzvahs of all sorts, Ben Adam LaMakom and Chaveru. But the learning process itself is Ben Adam LaAtzmo. He's developing his Torah knowledge and his Torah outlook. And indeed, there are those who see this threefold now division or of mitzvahs of Torah within the Mishnah at the beginning of Pirkei Avos, where Shimon HaTzadik tells us, Al Shlosha Dvarim Ha'olam Omed, Ala Torah, Balavoda, Balgumilus HaSodom. He divides essentially the entirety of Torah into three. Ala Torah refers to not just Torah generally, because Avoda and Gemilas Chasadim are different types of mitzvahs. Ala Torah is learning Torah, namely Ben Adam LaAtzmo. Val Havoda, of course, divine service, that's Ben Adam LaMakom. Val Gemilas Chasadim, Ben Adam LaChaveiro. So that threefold division actually is seemingly contained within that very well-known Mishnah in the beginning of Pirkei Avos. And moreover, the Maharal in his Chidushi Agados in Maseches Bava Kamma explains in this vein the statement of the Gemara there, which we quoted actually a couple of weeks ago in a slightly different context, with regards to if a person wishes to become a chosid. Hayman deboi lemevi chasida, if a person wishes to be a chosid, what should he do? Nowadays the answer is to change the order of psukah de zimra. But in the times of the Gemara, there are other instructions that are given. Some say he should be careful b'milei de brachos, with matters that relate to brachos. That's one opinion. The second opinion is yikayim milei de nezikin. He should be extremely careful when it comes to matters of nezikin, avoiding causing any harm to anyone else. And yesh omrim yikayim milei de avos. He should fulfill the matters of pirkei avos. And Maharal explains that these three once again represent the domains of the different types of mitzvahs. When we say yikayim milei de brachos, be especially scrupulous and careful with regards to matters of brachos. Brachos are addressing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's Ben Adam LaMakom, to be very careful with brachos. The second opinion says yikayim milei de nezikin, should be very careful in terms of avoiding damage. That's also an aspect of chasidus. And in fact, there's chassidus within avoiding damage. The Gemara, just a few lines above, mentions the practice of people that refers to as chassidim arishonim. If they had shards of glass or such like, so they wouldn't just throw them out. They'd bury them, and in fact, they'd bury them to a depth of more than three tefachim in a field, so that even the plow would not plow them up again. They're absolutely out of harm's way. That's, in a sense, above and beyond the call of duty. That's what Midas Chassidus is all about. And that's Midas Chassidus within the realm of Ben Adam Chaveiro. And then the final category, Mili de Avos, represents matters of Pirkei Avos, developing one's midos and one's character traits, representing the area of Ben Adam LaAtzma. So those are three areas. A person wishes to be a chassid in the full sense of the word, he has to address all of those three. And coming back to the mitzvah of Shemitah, the Rav Zevin explains that this mitzvah is very special in the sense that it overtly has all of these three elements within it. Ben Adam LaMakom, Ben Adam LaChaveiro, Ben Adam LaAtzmo. The aspect of Ben Adam LaMakom is recognizing that it's Hashem who gives us the land, right? Asher ani nosein livnei Yisrael. That's an act of recognition vis-a-vis our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Eretz Yisrael. V'shav sa'aretz Shabbos Lashem. The area of Ben Adam LaChaveiro goes hand in hand with that, because the produce of Shemitah is Hefker. And Hefker actually is a very high level of Ben Adam LaChaveiro, because whereas there are many mitzvahs in the Torah Ben Adam LaChaveiro, many of them involve giving. And even though giving is a good thing, it does have that element of you, the giver, and the poor person, the receiver, and that has its own sometimes lack of comfort. Everyone's comfortable taking from Hefker. There's no element, no one is ill at ease. No one feel bad receiving. Everyone's always happy to be partake of Hefker things, which means it's a very high level of bin adam lachaveiro, because you're not even saying, I'm prepared to give this to people, but you're actually saying, well, it's yours, it's not even mine to give you. I just live here, everyone can take, I'm partaking of Hefker myself. And what about the area of bin adam la'atmo? Well, here we find in a very pronounced way that Shemitah is not only, shall we say, a negative experience, it's also a positive experience. And by that we mean the focus of Shemitah should not only be for the farmer what he doesn't do that year, but what he does do that year. The Shemitah is the original sabbatical, whereby not only does he leave off the land for a year, but then he has a year at his disposal. He should be making sure to use that correctly. And therefore, the way to use the year, of course, is a time of learning Torah, and that's the full fulfillment of Shemitah, not only defined by what he isn't doing, namely working the land, but what he is doing, namely devoting himself for this year. He doesn't have perhaps the opportunity to do this every year, but he does this year. And therefore, all areas of Torah, these three divisions, are pronounced within the mitzvah of Shemitah. It makes it, in a sense, a classic mitzvah to be connected to Sinai, because it represents all the mitzvahs that come from Sinai in those three types of ways. And in fact, there is a fascinating chiddush in Parshanut from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. For the beginning of next week's Parsha, Im B'chukos HaTeleichu, carries with it the famous, again, Rashi, and it's from the Toras Kohanim, where what is the meaning of B'chukos HaTeleichu? Does it mean mitzvahs? It can't mean mitzvahs. The pasuk goes on to talk about mitzvahs. Rather, says Rashi, quoting the Toras Kohanim, B'chukos HaTeleichu means Shetihiyu Amelim BaTorah. You should be immersed in Torah. And although that message is generally taken as a standalone, and it has great value as a standalone message, as a general message, but Rabbi Yaakov says, from a certain point of view, the Torah hasn't really finished talking about Shemitah yet. As we will yet see, the Tokacha comes back to Shemitah, and therefore, primarily, the message of Shetiyu Amelim BaTorah is still part of Shemitah. As if to say, you're not working this year, so Shetiyu Amelim BaTorah. That's called fulfillment of Shemitah. And it's interesting that in many years, Bahar and B'chukosai go together. Because not working the land, and yes, Amelim BaTorah, is really the package, the full fulfillment of Shemitah. And in fact, Rabbi Yaakov says, we can see, as we look at the Tochacha, which we should, it's there to be looked at, it's there to be heard, we don't read it aloud, but it's meant to be heard and taken note of, that the Torah seems to identify two causes for the Togolos. The root cause begins, as surely as the brachos begin with the words B'chukos HaTeleichu, which is Amelim BaTorah, the klolos, the tochacha, begin with the word Vim B'chukos HaTimasu, neglect of B'chukos HaTimasu, which is not Amelim BaTorah. And it sounds like that's really the beginning of the downward spiral towards the Golos and all of that. So it sounds like Golos is ultimately a response to neglect of learning Torah. That said, the Pasuk, on more than one occasion, later on in the Tochacha, seems to indicate that the Golos is a response to not keeping Shemitah properly. Oz tirtze ha'aretz es shabso seha, then the land will reclaim its shabbosos, you didn't keep Shemitah. So the question is, what is the cause for the galus? Is it not learning Torah? B'chukos HaTimasu? Is it not keeping Shemitah? Ash tir ta'arza shabso seha? But Rabbi Yaakov explains that in his analysis, these are two separate causes, because Shemitah has not fully been fulfilled unless it's used for the opportunity that not working the land gives you. If not working the land is meant for B'chukos HaTeleichu, then if that's neglected, and rather B'chukos HaTimasu, that's a violation of Shemitah. It's a waste of Shemitah, and the land will yet even need to reclaim a Shemitah like that. And that's how those two causes for the Golos, in a sense, are unified and represent the same idea. So this is a very thought-provoking explanation, as we phrased it, the post-Teras Kohanim question, why of all the mitzvahs that are meant to represent all mitzvahs, Shemitah was the one that was chosen, Bahar Sinai there. Now, if we move to Pasuk Beis, let's see how the Pasuk introduces Daber al Bnei Yisrael v'omartar lehem ki sovo el ha'aretz asher ani nosein lachem v'shov sa'aretz Shabbos l'Hashem. Shemitah. And the mitzvah of Shemitah is introduced with the words Daber al Bnei Yisrael v'omartar alehem. Now, actually, many mitzvahs in the Torah are introduced that with those words Daber al Bnei Yisrael v'omartar alehem. It's practically a signature introduction. But nonetheless, we shouldn't get used to it, because it's a very specific phrase, and the Orach Chaim HaKadosh on many occasions discusses why a mitzvah would be introduced that way. And in our instance, he gives two explanations, and they're both based on the same observation. Namely, as we know, there's a difference in connotation between the word Dibur and Amira. Dibur has a kind of a harsh connotation, diber ha'ish itanu koshos, whereas amira has a more of a milder and softer and more encouraging, perhaps, connotation. Kotomar lebeis Yaakov, amira raka, which means that if a mitzvah is introduced with the words daber abnei Yisrael va'amarta lehem, it sounds like you're introducing, on the one hand, a somewhat harsher element of the mitzvah, but on the other hand, a comforting element, and the two, let's say, go together. And how does that express itself within the mitzvah of Shemitah? Well, as we said, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh gives two explanations. The first is that the presentation of Shemitah is very interesting. On the one hand, Shemitah is a difficult mitzvah. It's a dibur kasha, in the sense that if you're used to working the land and that's where your food comes from, and then the Torah comes along and says, well, this year you just leave it alone, it's not easy. People who keep Shemitah scrupulously, properly, are called Giborei Koach, because it takes some doing. And from that point of view, this requirement on the part of the Torah, it's Dibur, it's difficult. However, it's also accompanied by an Amira. In what sense? Because the Torah here goes out of its way to voice the potential concerns of the Jewish people and reassure them. That's what we find later in the Psukim, Vechitomar, perhaps you'll say, Manocha Bashana Shvius, you may be concerned. And the Torah, in a sense, is voicing these concerns. It's okay, don't worry, Bitsi Visi Es Brachasi L'Shaloshonim, I'll give a special bracha, and there will be enough. That reassurance is coming to offset perhaps some of the anxiety that the people who keep Shemitah may be feeling. And in a sense, that is the Amira to the Dibur. The Dibur is, gotta keep off the land for a year, but the Amira is, it will be okay. You may be thinking, what will we eat? Bitsi Visi Es Brachasi. Daber the Amarta. That's the first Perush of the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. The second raises an interesting question about what we would call easy mitzvahs or hard mitzvahs. What constitutes an easy mitzvah or a hard mitzvah? Perhaps we may say a mitzvah that's easier to do or a mitzvah that's harder to do, but there's another way of approaching easy and hard when it comes to mitzvahs. And that is it easy to understand what's behind the mitzvah? Is it easy to accept the idea of the mitzvah? Because from a certain point of view, when a person understands what they're doing, they don't mind expending effort. They don't mind if it demands their application or consistency, because they understand fully what they're doing. If they don't understand what they're doing, then even something relatively easy is hard. It's hard because why are they doing this at all? And that's ma'asim b'chol yom. I mean, that's the way people work. Something that they understand and appreciate, they're prepared to expend much effort. If they don't, they're barely prepared to expend any effort. And therefore, here comes the mitzvah of Shemitah. In this respect, is it an easy mitzvah or a hard mitzvah? Is it a mitzvah that one can understand or not? It really depends. because the practicalities of Shemitah are difficult. As if to say, Hashem says, don't work the seventh year. That's hard. Just stop. From that point of view, it's dibur. If one doesn't understand the background, and it's harder to accept it, that no one likes to be told what to do, ultimately, and especially something like this, and so you'll do it, but you have to overcome that resistance of you've been told not to work the land. And interestingly, by point of comparison, the mitzvah of Parah Aduma is only introduced with the word Daber. Daber b'nei Yisrael v'yikhu li truma. There is no v'amarta because there's no understanding to us. However, when it comes to Shemitah, Daber v'amarta. Where's the Amira? The Amira here is the Torah's way of making it easier to relate to Shemitah, easier to accept the concept of Shemitah. Because the truth is, if someone comes and tells me what to do with my property, I'm not so much accepting about that. And human nature being what it is, even if the Torah tells me what to do with my property, I've got to overcome that. But if someone gives me something on condition, then I fully understand and embrace the notion that I need to fulfill those conditions because it was on that condition that it was given to me. Which means the question as to whether Shemitah is a mitzvah that's easy to relate to or hard to relate to is really a function of whether you remember how you got the land in the first place. We like to forget the source of our success. If we feel that we're self-made and we got the land by ourselves, we're not inclined to have anyone tell us what to do. However, the more conscious we are that it's Hashem who's giving us the land, the more naturally we can relate to the idea that if Hashem gave us the land, He can attach conditions, and 100%. On the contrary, we're grateful for the 6 years. We have no issues with the seventh year. And therefore, looked at in this way, Pasuk Beis, Daber b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem. Tell them something. It may seem harsh, but then remind them that it's not so harsh. But amarta lehem, ki savau al aretz asher ani nosein lachem. I'm giving you the land. Don't forget that. If you forget that, so then that's a mistake. And then it will be difficult to relate to Shemitah. If you remember it, and you should remember it, Shemitah will not be that difficult because the one who gave you the land stipulated that once every 7 years, b'shav sa haaretz, shavas lashem. So, these are the two very wonderful biurim of the Rachaim HaKadosh in the, as we say, it's the general introduction, but we shouldn't take it for granted. Daber v'amarta should be inspected because it's sets the atmosphere for the introduction of the mitzvah, an aspect of dibur and an aspect of amira. Now, I'd like to move from here a bit into the middle of the parsha to Pasuk Lamed Hei, where there are instructions for really how to help people who've fallen on hard times. Perek Kaf Hei, Pasuk Lamed Hei reads, V'chiyamuch achicha u'mata yado imach. If your fellow, if he falls on hard times, going through a difficult time financially, mata yado imach, v'chzakta bo, support him, help him. Ger v'tosha v'chay imach. And it's interesting to consider how this mitzvah is part of the mitzvah of the parsha of Shemitah, because it's not talking about Shemitah and it's not land related, and it's another very important mitzvah. But how exactly is it related? And I came across a beautiful interpretation from in the name of someone called Rav Tanchum Gershon Belitsky. Now, that's not a name that would have necessarily stood out for me, generally. However, Rav Tanchum Gershon Belitsky was the Rav of a shtetl called Yashinovka. Now, Yashinovka is also not a name that would have stood out for me. It's a little place somewhere near Bialystok. However, it does, because Yashinovka is where my grandmother was from. The family Saperstein, my father's mother was from there, and so was her sister, Sarah Saperstein, who was Rav Kuperman's mother. So Yashinovka is very close to the family. I don't know how many people live there, but it was a pleasure to meet in writing their Rav, Rav Tanchum Gershon Belitsky, and this is what he says. And it's a classic Musar Vort, really, but very, of course, very important. Shemitah really is based on bitachon. I mean, the Torah encourages us and helps us, but it helps us develop this midah of bitachon. Here's a person, normally he may go through the year or years thinking, it's all up to me, kochi v'otzem yadi, that's not acceptable. And the Torah says, you've got to lay off the land for a year. And in case you're wondering, well, who's going to provide? The answer is, Hashem will provide, because really, Hashem always provides. And that's the message that runs through Shemitah. By the time a person has really absorbed the message of Shemitah, it's clear to him it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu who runs the world, and he's the one that provides sustenance, and that's that. So Rav Belitsky says that is an extremely important idea, but it could be abused. When you are met with your fellow who's fallen on hard times. Because when the Torah told me that I can't work the land and I wasn't sure what to make of it, but the answer is, Hashem Yazar, Hashem will help with Tzivisi Esperchasi. So I leave Shemitah full of bitachon, which is fantastic, because when I see this person who's fallen on hard times, I approach him in the same way, full of bitachon, Hashem Yazar. Don't worry, it will be, I believe be'emunah shelema that everything will work out for the best and you'll be just fine. And let me know when it happens. And to that end, the Torah juxtaposes these two parshios, really, as if to say, it's an abuse of bitachon for you to be neglectful in helping someone, because part of the reason why you're here is to help them. And you could be the shaliach through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is helping him. So bitachon shouldn't be a reason to withhold from helping. And therefore, Shabbos Lashem, Shabbos Hashem, ki li haaretz, 100%. But ki amucha chicha, your friend needs, help him. That's not a time to give him a drasha about bitachon. Or if you want to give him a drasha, it should be while you're helping him, not instead, or explaining why you didn't help him. So that's a very beautiful idea, and again, very, very meaningful, from Rav Tanchum Gershom Belitsky of Yashinovka. Interestingly, with regards to kiyamucha chicha, there are many terms for needy people. I guess there's many different types of needy people in the world. And there's Ani, and Rush, and Dal, and one of them is Mach. And some Mefarshim say that the connotation of the word Mach is perhaps someone who's needy, but doesn't let on that he's needy. He is impoverished, but he's not really acting that way. There are people like that. There is the Pasuk says in Sefer Mishlei, Yesh mis asher ve'ein kol. Mis asher, from the word asher, and mit asher is reflective. There are some people, they act rich and they have nothing. They make themselves out to be rich. They have no money. Perhaps they used to have money and they just can't bring themselves to adapt to having no money. And therefore they continue to drive the same car and live in the same house and there's no food in the house. Yesh mis asher, it's a phenomenon. Ve'ein kol, the opposite phenomenon is also true. Mis Roshesh, there are some people who present themselves as paupers, Vahon Rav, but they're sitting on a fortune at home. But you look at them, you give them a penny, you don't realize. There's all sorts. And that's an interesting Shaila now, because there may be, again, a certain resistance within a person. You see someone, you know that they don't have as much as they present themselves as having. Unless the person think, well, listen, you know, if he's not prepared to put his hand out, he's not prepared to recognize that he needs help, so good luck to him, and why should I help him? And that's not acceptable. If he needs help, even if he's not asking for help, but you know that he does, and he still dresses like he's on top of the world, you know he needs help, you've got to help him. Kiyamucha chicha, even such a person. And the Balei HaRemez point out, the Pasuk here, Lamed Hei, v'chiyamuch achicha, he falls on hard times. The word yamuch, yud, mem, vav, kaf. Yesh mitasher ve'ein kol. Some people, that's the pasuk in Mishlei alluded to here in the word yamuch. Nonetheless, bechzachtabo, you've got to help him. So, these are some discussions as they relate to Shemitah and emanations thereof. And I would like to move from there to the end of the parsha, pretty much almost to the very end. The final pasuk, in fact, Perek Kaf Vav, pasuk Beis. The final two psukim in terms of the chalukah of the chapters, which is not a Jewish thing and not not the etzem, but Kachvav gives us two psukim at the end of Parshas Bahar. And the final pasuk reads, Eshabsosai tishmeru u'mikdashi tirao ani Hashem. That's how Parshas Bahar ends. Keep Shabbos, be in fear or awe of the Mikdash and the Hashem. So the first question is, looking at this pasuk, why are these two things together? How do they relate to each other? Keep Shabbos, fear the Mikdash, Shabbos Tishmo, Mikdashi Tiro. Again, if we may borrow Rashi's phraseology, Ma Inyan Shabbos Eil Mikdash. How are these two things related? Well, actually, we should note that this discussion has already taken place. The discussion of this pasuk has already happened. And the reason why is because this pasuk has already happened. The very exact words of this pasuk are to be found earlier on in Parshas Kedoshim, Perek Yutes, Pasuk Lamed, word for word. I'm not aware of too many other psukim, if at all, in the Torah that are literally word for word iterated twice in the Torah. Earlier on in Parshas Kedoshim, Chazal talk about why Shabbos is connected to Mikdash, and there are two classic drashos there, two classic explanations. The first is to teach us that when one has to keep Shabbos, and Shabbos takes precedence over the Mikdash, the Lamedcha, the mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash does not supersede the Shabbos. That's number one. You've got to build the Beis HaMikdash, Mora Mikdash, make the Mikdash, but not at the expense of Shabbos. Shabbos comes first. Which is interesting, because that is a lesson that we have learned at least twice already in the Torah. Chumash Shemos, in Parshas Kisisa, Achas Shabbos HaTishmeru, Rashi commented, building the Mishkan doesn't supersede Shabbos. In the beginning of Vayakhel, Moshe presents the Mishkan, but first talks about Shabbos. Rashi comments, to teach you, Shabbos comes first. So the lesson that we're learning from this pasuk, we seem to have learned already, and that would be a valid question as to why we need to be taught again. The second limud, once again, why has the connection between Shabbos and Mikdash? Actually, they go together. I think it's a Gemara in Yevamos and Daf Vav, if I'm not mistaken, which says that it teaches you that Mora Mikdash, awe of the Mikdash, is like Shabbos. In what respect? Shabbos is constant. Shabbos never goes away. It's there the whole time, every week. And so is Mora Mikdash. And by that, we're being taught that once the Beis HaMikdash is there, the Mora Mikdash is always there, because the Shechina is always there. And this brings us back to the discussion of the Rambam, and the Rambam himself paskens, codifies, that the Kedusha of the Mikdash is exactly the same. Even after the Churban, the Kedusha of the place is the same, the Shechina is still there, and he quotes this drasha. Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Perek Vav, Halacha Tes Vav, just like Ma Shabbos La'olam, Af Mora Mikdash La'olam. Fundamentally, Mafra Ma Mikdash still has that Kedusha, and it's still a mitzvah of Mora Mikdash. So those are, shall we say, treatments of the Pasuk in itself. But as we noted, it's been said before, and those drushes have been made already, and in our Parsha, it's said again. In which case, the question is no longer Ma Inyan Shabbos Eitzel Mikdash, what Shabbos got to do with Mikdash, which we've kind of answered, but Ma Inyan Shabbos and Mikdash Eitzel Parshas Bahar, because they have already been mentioned. And there is a fascinating explanation of this pasuk in the Ibn Ezra on our Parsha. And he explains that actually this second iteration of the pasuk, Shabsosai and Mikdashi Tirao, relate to Parshas Bahar. They relate to the mitzvahs of Parshas Bahar. The mitzvahs of Parshas Bahar are Shmita and Yovel. and they are what are being referred to in this final pasuk. The parsha has been about Shemitah and Yovel, and so is its concluding pasuk. Says the Ibn Ezra, "Es shabsos haitishmeru," keep my shabbosos, refers to Shemitah. Shemitah is Shabbos. V'shav sa'aretz, Shabbos l'Hashem. U'mikdashi tira'u, and be in fear, in awe of my mikdash. That's Yovel. Because Yovel is called Kodesh. V'kidashtim ishnasach ha'mishim shana. And therefore, Shemitah and Yovel are Shabbos and mikdash. And the final pasuk is enjoining us to give each one the due attention and care that they deserve. And this really beckons us to ask, what exactly is the meaning of these depictions of Shemitah and Yovel as Shabbos and Kodesh? What's behind all of this? And really the question is, Yovel, we know, in principle, is essentially another Shemitah. As if to say, generally your seven-year cycle has one Shemitah, but after seven, it has two. And a lot of the restrictions of Shemitah are also in Yovel. It seems to be Shemitah times two. But is there anything that Yovel, in a sense, adds beyond Shemitah? Not just another year of Shemitah, so to speak, but something actually beyond. Well, we know that when it comes to Yovel, all land reverts to its original owner. You can never really hold on to land or fields past the Shemitah year. And that's something that is only true for Yovel. It's not true for Shemitah. You can purchase a field for 30 years and there could be a good few Shemitahs. You don't work the field during the Shemitah year, but it doesn't go back to the owner. But come Yovel, it does. And the reason is, Hashem says, Kili Haaretz, because the land is mine. Well, when it comes to Shemitah, we say that Asher Ani Nosein Livnei Yisrael, Hashem gives the land to the Jewish people. So how do these two, in a sense, go together? A unique interpretation of this Ibn Ezra is found in the writings of Rav Shlomo Fischer, Shlita of Yerushalayim, one of the most unusual Baalei Machshava, really, of our generation. And he explains that really what we are seeing here is a fundamental presentation of the unique nature of Eretz Yisrael, of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. Because ultimately, there are two aspects to the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. That is to say, there are two layers of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And he calls them, in his terminology, Kedushas Haaretz and Kedushas HaMikdash. There is Eretz Yisrael Kedusha, and there is Mikdash Kedusha. And he prefaces with a mashal. It's quite an Amami type of mashal, but it gets the point across. If you imagine a group of people, Jews, right, they wish to settle in their community, and they do. In a sense, that community is a special place, certainly for them, and it's a holy place. I mean, Jews live there, and they live Jewish lives there, and that's... And then at a certain point, they build a shul. So, the shul has its own kedusha, really, not disconnected, but its own kedusha, and the shul has shul grounds. So generally, the place, it really is a holy place because Jews live there and living Jewish life there. But then in the center, you've got the shul, and the shul has its own emanation of shul grounds. Says or Fisher, that's what Eretz Yisrael is like. On the one hand, shall we say, on a basic level, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is because this is the place that Hashem has chosen for Bnei Yisrael. Yisrael Kedoshim Heim. And therefore the land is holy because this is the place that Bnei Yisrael should be. And when we enter the land, we activate that aspect of its Kedusha. And then you have Mitzvah Satluyas Ba'aretz, Truma, and Maaser, and so on and so forth. That's Kedusha Sa'aretz, as the setting for Bnei Yisrael. But it's also the setting for something else. It's the setting for the Beis HaMikdash. And as the setting for Beis HaMikdash certainly has the Kedusha in excess, right, of Eretz Yisrael. But then Beis HaMikdash has its grounds. Well, what are the grounds of the Beis HaMikdash? Ultimately, in the fullest emanation, the grounds of the Beis HaMikdash are Eretz Yisrael. It's another layer of Kedushas Haaretz. It's not Kadosh only by virtue of the fact that it's the place for the Jewish people, but it's the place for the Shekhinah. One could almost say that when the Jewish people arrive, the Kedushas, wherever they are, in the Beis HaMikdash, it emanates outwards from the Beis HaMikdash. And that gives another, as we said, layer to Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. It's temple grounds. And, says R. Fisher, what I just said, if it sounds perhaps somewhat abstract, I will demonstrate from a Mishnah. The Mishnah in Maseches Kelim, towards the end of the first parak, states, Parak Aleph, Mishnah Vav, Esa Kedusha Sein, there are 10 levels of Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. You've got Eretz Yisrael generally, then you've got the walled cities, then you've got Yerushalayim, then you've got Harabayas, then you've got within that, you've got the Azara, the courtyard, and the Makam HaMikdash. It goes to, in a sense, concentrically moving inwards. So it starts with, let's say, the mildest of the Kedushas, Eretz Yisrael itself, and then moves inwards. And ultimately, it's a pyramid with 10 tiers, right? 10 layers of Kedusha. But the first level, as we said, is Eretz Yisrael itself. Eretz Yisrael mekudeshes mikol ha'aratzos. It's holier than any other land. Umahi kedushaso. How is that expressed? Where do we see that Eretz Yisrael is more kodesh than every other land? So the Mishnah shemivin mimena haomer vabikurim ushtei alechem. Because from Eretz Yisrael you could bring produce, barley for the omer. You can bring wheat for the Shtelechem, you can bring fruit for Bikurim, only from Eretz Yisrael. You can't bring those things from Chutz La'aretz. Masha'ein mevi'en kein mikol ha'aratzos. You can't bring that from any other land. That's why Eretz Yisrael is holier. That's how it's expressed. So Mefarshim raised the question. That's it? I mean, those are the only mitzvahs aren't even mitzvahs when you think about it. It's eligible to bring things for a mitzvah. There's no other mitzvahs that apply only in Eretz Yisrael and not anywhere else. What about Truma and Maaser and Leket Shikra and Peah and all of those things? Why aren't they mentioned in this Mishnah as markers for the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael as opposed to anywhere else? Says the Fisher, we see that Mishnah is not discussing Kedushas Haaretz. It's not discussing the mitzvahs that apply in it. Eser Kedushas means there are 10 emanations of Kedushas HaMikdash. The broadest emanation is Eretz Yisrael itself. But that will now need to be expressed in its eligibility to bring things for the Mikdash. You can bring the barley for the Omer. You can bring the wheat for the Shelechem. You can bring fruit for Bikurim. These are things that are brought to the Mikdash. So these are Mikdash markers. Trumas and Maisers are as well. The Mishnah isn't talking about that. So we see from that Mishnah that really you have this tenfold outwards ripple of Kedusha, because ultimately Eretz Yisrael has the status of temple grounds, Beis HaMikdash territory. You can bring things from it and only from it for the Beis HaMikdash. He proceeds in his incredible way to note something else. Towards the end of Chumash Bamidbar and Parshas Pinchas, there are instructions for how to allot the Nachala in Eretz Yisrael, where each Shevet should live, etc. How were these things apportioned? Actually, there were two items involved in the apportioning of Eretz Yisrael. The first one was a goral, a lottery. General. The second element present, second entity present was Urim v'Tumim. So says the Gemara. So you have this incredible combination. These two things generally don't go together. The instruments through which Eretz Yisrael will be apportioned are, number one, casting lots, and number two, Urim v'Tumim. How do they work together? Well, says R. Fisher, these represent the two aspects of Bnei Yisrael receiving their portion in Eretz Yisrael. In what capacity? On the one hand, Eretz Yisrael is Nachlas Am Yisrael. It's their inheritance, right? The Nachla. And as a Nachla, it's apportioned like a Nachla is, through a lottery, and that's the way through. Sefer Yeshua, that's a classic way of apportioning of a Nachla. However, they also take their place within the setting of Makom HaMikdash, as Kedusha number one, for at the center of which is the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, in keeping with the nature of each tribe settling where it does, apropos of the Mikdash, one of the Klei HaMikdash is used in ascertaining and allotting to each tribe where it is that they will be. That's, you have this incredible partnership. Gerel and Urim V'Tumim correspond to the two elements of really settling in Eretz Yisrael. And all of this is really expressed ultimately within the two aspects of Shemitah and Yovel. Shemitah relates to the Nachala aspect. As if to say, as it's introduced, really, Shemitah is introduced when you come to the land, Asher Ani Nosein Bnei Yisrael. It's about Hashem giving this land to Bnei Yisrael. It's to them, it's for them to live as Bnei Yisrael. Now, Shemitah is there to remind us that Hashem is the one who's giving us the land. That's why it's introduced, Asher Ani Nosein Bnei Yisrael. In other words, Shemitah is not a restriction, it's a condition. Hashem gives us the land on condition that once every 7 years we take a break to remember and reinstill within our consciousness where it comes from and what it's for, etc. So in a sense, Shemitah is not to in any way undo our ownership of the land. On the contrary, it's in order to consolidate it, because that the fulfillment of that condition is with which Asher Ani Nosein Bnei Yisrael. The more we keep Shemitah, the more the land is given to us. Because it's ours. But there is another element of the land whereby it's really temple grounds. And from that point of view, just like the Beis HaMikdash belongs to Hashem, so all of Eretz Yisrael belongs to Hashem as the setting for the Mikdash. It belongs to the Shechina, which means that ultimately our ownership is not absolute, and that is something that is expressed in Yovel. That's why you can never sell land beyond the Yovel, because when Yovel comes, it's no longer yours to sell. And that's why, whereas in Shemitah, the operative words, the motif words of Shemitah are the land Asher Ani Nosein Libnei Yisrael, that I'm giving to Yisrael, but the operative words for Yovel are Kili Haaretz. In this respect, it dominates in Shemitah, and the land really belongs to Hashem. Any sales are terminated at that point. And what's really fascinating, as he goes on to point out, is that Yovel takes effect. Although it's the 50th year, it doesn't take effect at the beginning of the year. The year begins on Rosh Hashanah. But rather, Yovel takes effect on Yom Kippur, as the Pasuk itself says, right? Basiri l'chodesh, that's when B'yom HaKippurim, Tavir Shefar B'chol Arzachem, not on Rosh Hashanah. So Fisher says, well, it's just to consider atmospherically, of all the days in the year, Yom Kippur is the one which is most, shall we say, avoda intensive. It is entire, avoda basically goes from the morning to the, I mean, Yom Kippur is a different day for us, post Beis HaMikdash. And in the time straight after the Beis HaMikdash, people didn't know what to do with Yom Kippur. Because no one went to Shul on Yom Kippur. They went to the Beis HaMikdash. Avodas Yom HaKippurim. It was one of the hardest transitions, really, was Yom Kippur post-Beis HaMikdash. If ever there was a day that the absence of the Beis HaMikdash was felt, it was Yom Kippur. There's no, the two Mechaprim, Sa'il Hashem, Sa'il HaZazel, they're not there anymore. People weren't even sure if they could get Kapara. That's why the Torah emphasizes about Yom Kippur, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, the day itself, because it's so easy to, there's so much avoda going on, it's very easy to see that if there's no avoda, so maybe there's no Yom Kippur. And that's really the emek of what Rabbi Akiva said. It's sung more popularly around about Lag Ba'Omer time. Okay, it's not wrong to sing it then, but it's said about Yom Kippur. Omer Rabbi Akiva, Ashreichem Yisrael, Happy Yisrael. Lifnei mi atem mitarim, umi mitaristem. Before whom do you purify yourself? Who purifies you? Avichem shebashamayim. To us, that sounds like such an obvious thing to say. It just sounds like a very nice thing to say. But it was critical for Rabbi Akiva to say that. It's Rabbi Akiva living in the time after the Churban. He's telling the Jewish people that at the end of the day, it's Hashem who's mechaper for you, and Hashem is there. He was allowing them to adapt to a post-Beis HaMikdash, Yom Kippur. It's a very interesting point. So there's no question that of all the days of the year, from dawn till dusk, Yom Kippur is about the Beis HaMikdash. And that's why Yovel expresses itself on Yom Kippur. And the Yovel year comes because the Yovel is about remembering how ultimately Eretz Yisrael is the setting for the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore on the most Beis HaMikdash intensive day, that's when Yovel happens and all sales are reset and so on and so forth. It's just the way that Rav Fisher looks at all of these things, it's phenomenal. And so, as we're saying, we could summarize the above discussion by formulating that Shemitah and Yovel, in the Shemitah and Yovel cycle, each one recognizes a different aspect of the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Shemitah recognizes Kedushas Eretz Yisrael as Nachlas Yisrael, Kedushas Haaretz, and Yovel recognizes Kedushas Eretz Yisrael as Makom HaMikdash. Is there any way that we could pare this down into an even more brief formula? Well, the Torah has. Because coming back to the Ibn Ezra, that's the explanation of the final pasuk. Es shabsosai tishmeru u'mikdashi tiro'u. Shabsosai tishmeru, says Ibn Ezra, Shmita, mikdashi tiro'u is Yovel. Why is Shemitah called Shabbos? Because it's Shabbos Hashem. Hashem has given you the land, right? Once every 7 years, you take off land to remember who is giving you the land. Well, Mikdashi Tiro, it really sounds like it's talking about the Beis HaMikdash. It is, because Yovel is about remembering the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael and the ultimate status of Eretz Yisrael as the setting for the Mikdash. And that's his Bior in the Ibn Ezra, which now will never look the same. That Shabsosai Tishmo is Shmita, and Mikdashi Tiro is the year of Yovel. Really a stunning explanation from Rav Shlomo Fischer, just to see the way that he looks at these things and all things, and plenty to think about. Of course, certainly these days, we're thinking about Eretz Yisrael. Important to remember both the Shmita message and the Yovel message, because they remind us not only where Eretz Yisrael is coming from, but where we still need to anticipate that it should be going towards. And we're in the middle, and the more we appreciate the first, the more basis we have to look forward to the second. Should be b'meheiri aminu.